What's up, race fans? You have just entered the right place to talk about everything racing and go for another ride on the In the Groove podcast with your host, Slammin' Sam Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, sit back, strap in, don't go anywhere.
What's up, everybody? I know it's kind of been a break since I've done the last podcast here, but we've got some racing out of the way in the Florida area. First week of NHRA, World Door Slammers, and as you can see, I'm repping a hat of someone that's going to be on tonight, someone that everyone in the racing community knows, just a name that speaks for itself. So I hope you're ready to go for another journey here on In the Groove podcast. All right. So like I said, you know, we did get some racing done out of the Florida area. Went down to Orlando for the World Door Slammer Nationals. Second year of that race at West Bucks, Drag Illustrated, Elite Motorsports, C-Tech manufacturer. And as West Bucks says, the slew of manufacturers that help him out and sponsors that he has there. So went down and kind of helped out the Drag Illustrated team, which was a phenomenal thing. Got to catch up with some of my favorite racers and other people that I know, you know, the Elite team, Courtney, and met some new friends. But the person that I'm bringing on today kind of, I've wanted to do this interview for a very long time, but things kind of landed in the right position. So this driver needs no introduction. I mean, he is a grudge racer. He's a very well-known radio racer. Now he's stepping into the world of NHRA Pro Mod, and, you know, he's making a name for himself. So without further ado, I want to bring on my friend, you guys' friend, Lyle Barnett. Lyle, how's it going today?
What's up, man? It's going good. We're still recovering. I got in late last night, got a little bit of sleep, woke up this morning, headed to the shop, waited for the guys to get back with the rig, made sure everything was good. Back home here, spent a little time with my old lady and the dogs, and then back to work tomorrow, you know, back to the grind. We had a pretty decent outing, but I won't talk about that here in a minute. You know, it's time to get back to work.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, I got a couple of interviews with you going through all the stuff that I got from down there at, you know, the World Door Slammers. But let's kind of, I don't know really where you want to start, where I even want to start. But for people that don't know who you are, how would you describe who Lyle Barnett is as of today?
Well, most of you know me because at one point in my life, I was the hottest man in drag racing for 28 seconds. You know, I grew up in a small town in central North Carolina, played sports, you know, drove and raced motorcycle or, well, four wheelers and, you know, grew up on a little farm and out in the country, went to a really small 1A school, went to college actually and played football for a year, ended up in Charlotte to go to the university here, UNC Charlotte, met my now fiance. We have a house in Gastonia, North Carolina, where she is from. She's a nurse down the road in the hospital. We've got two pretty cool dogs, and I've been racing ever since. But in 2015, I had what some say is one of the world's worst car fires in door slammer drag racing history. And most of you that watch this show probably know all about it and have seen the videos. For any of you that haven't, we were at Valdosta for No Mercy 6. I was in Radio Versus the World. Had a electronics failure, which in turn caused an engine failure, fire inside the car at 180-ish, and was out of control, bounced off of both walls. Was in the burn center for 2 months, year-long recovery, grafts to my face, my hands, my feet, burnt my lungs up really bad, you know, and really at that time what I considered a huge setback and, you know, and life-altering. And granted, I guess in a way it kind of was, right? But it essentially led me to where I am today. You know, I've had big opportunities since then. Jason Digby, who owns the Dodge Dart, the 69 Dodge Dart leaf spring car that I drive in the radio world, opened his arms, said, here's my car. Here's all the stuff that I have. Go racing. We've been racing together ever since. We continue to race together and plan to do so as long as, you know, he still wants to race. But in the meantime, back in November, we struck a deal with Richard Freeman and everyone at Elite to drive an NHRA Pro Modified entry for the 2021 season and beyond. Hopefully I'm not skipping too far ahead here, but that literally happened in November, you know, and here we are post Gator Nationals where we had a pretty good showing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I can say it, and I don't think I've ever told you this, even reaching out to you, is when I started my original business, Mad Bro Motorsports, it was during that time of your fire, your accident, and I used quite a few of your pictures to tell people, like, hey, man, this is serious, especially with the grudge racing scene. You know, a lot of people didn't realize, oh, I'm just going to run this car and I'm going to do what I want to do. And people didn't, you know, take it serious. And I can say I didn't too at first. You know, you go out there with a single layer jacket on and yeah, whatever, I'm running nitrous, I don't care, whatever. And, you know, after seeing it and following it, you know, and I'm a huge Lights Out, No Mercy fan. So the grudge world to me, it's, you know, kind of how I grew up. But then, like you said, talking about the things that you're doing now and with Elite and all that, I mean, there's a lot to dive into, even with just like your history in racing and where you started. But we'll kind of start from where we just left off. You know, you were running at the Gators, had a pretty good, you know, a good showing, especially for, you know, how young you guys' team is, I would say, in this. And then, you know, stepping back from there where we saw each other at the World Door Slammer Nationals, like, what did that kind of feel for you as that outing was, you know, going out with your team and competing against these big dogs?
Yeah, you know, a bit intimidating at first. You know, I mean, I'm stepping into a world, like you said, that I've never been a part of. I've never raced. I've never entered an NHRA national divisional, never entered an NHRA race in my life. You know, didn't have a license until this deal came about. Like, so this is all new, right? And I had no idea what to expect. Didn't know if I was just going to be one of those shoved off into the grass off to the side, you know, and nobody would ever know we were there, you know, and were we going to be able to compete? Was I going to be able to drive this thing? You know, so many unknowns, and we just showed up and here we go, you know. But, you know, Justin Elks and everybody, all those guys at Modern Racing, where I'm now employed, are really good at what they do. They've got a, you know, this car has been ran. You've seen this car run in previous seasons. Just I wasn't the driver. Steve Matusik drove this car. Alex Laughlin drove this car last year. You know, so it's made a few laps down the quarter mile at an NHRA event, just not with me in the seat. But really, the car was ready to go. You know, it was me being comfortable, learning how to drive, because it is. It's a different driving style than what I'm used to. You know, in radial racing, if that thing quivers the tire or spins it, it's over. You know, with these things, that's not the case. They drive through a lot of tire shake and pretty much spin the entire run. You know, my old trusty beer money here, you know, we've been running that thing on slicks. And if you're unfamiliar with that car, you can go watch Horsepower Wars, the $10,000 drag shootout season one on YouTube.
You got a Mustang. I'm a Mustang guy. I love them, but
yeah. I've got a shitbox Mustang is what I've got.
It's the power plant that I don't agree with.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like going fast. And for somebody like yourself that doesn't really enjoy going fast, then that's what I would put in. It's a small
controversy art. Jeez, I invite the guy over.
Anyway, it is an LS Turbo in little beer money, you know, and I really enjoyed running that car and racing it in small tire, no prep. And what I was getting at there was that I've kind of gotten a feel back under my butt, you know, what it feels like to drive something with a slick on it. It's just a different deal, you know, and I've made thousands of laps in a radial car and we're creeping up on 40 or 50 in a big tire, you know, 3,000 plus horsepower Pro Mod. So, but like I was saying, Justin and those guys are really good at what they do. And if you're not unfamiliar with Justin Elks, he's got a long history in pro stock, is now the crew chief of my car and tuner. And then, you know, a co-crew chief, I guess you would say, on Alex Laughlin's Pro Mod, who Anthony Lum is the crew chief of. And we are teammates, race out of the same trailer. So if you come to an NHRA national event Alex and I are pitted nose to nose in the same pit. And we run the exact same combination. We get to share data, which is pretty cool. You know, and kind of makes us feel like we've got a little bit of an advantage, right? But, you know, showing up to the door slammers, I was extremely nervous for a multitude of reasons. One, it was my first outing, my first quarter mile outing, my first time being, you know, in the pits and at a racetrack with the full team, both pro stock and pro mod. You know, and our pro stock team is fielded full of hitters, Erica Enders, Troy Coughlin Jr., Aaron Stanfield, Alex Laughlin. They got a couple guys like Bruno Massel and those guys that drive a car for them, you know, and obviously team owner Richard Freeman. You know, and everybody was there, and everybody's eyes are all eyes are on you. And we didn't run too good. You know, we definitely didn't run as good as we wanted to. We decided to try some new things that just didn't quite work out. But on the flip side of that, and well, unfortunately, I guess Alex and I drew each other first round. Only good thing out of that is one of us was guaranteed to go on, right? And Alex actually went on to the final where he lost to Belushi in a close one. But so we leave Orlando, not disappointed because we didn't do terrible, but this didn't do as good as we wanted to, and showed up to Gainesville, and damn if the first two runs weren't just about as bad. So we decided after the Saturday, the early Saturday session, we were just going to go right back to our old setup, which I had been testing with for months before that. And in the third and final qualifier to get in for the Gator Nationals, we busted off a 571 at 252 miles an hour, which put me fourth when qualifying was said and done. So you were going from, I think we were 22nd or third, all the way up to fourth in one shot, you know, and essentially knocking out the reigning champ for the past 2 years, Stevie Fast, because we ran each other in that last round. And my 71, even though he ran 82 with an 8, I think, which would have been fast enough to put him on the bump, my 71 bumped him out, and he did not qualify for the Gator Nationals, which I think was as much a surprise as me qualifying where I did. You know, so obviously confidence back up, everybody's pumped. You know, we roll into race day. First round, we had Tommy D in the Mark Caruso ride. We made a pretty good lap there. I went 74. He went 76, and I was 15 and he was 50 on the tree. So we, a round one win, and straight into second round, which is the quarterfinals. When you get down to eight cars, you know, Justin and everybody did their job. We roll up there, and for whatever reason, I was just a touch late. I was 47 on the tree. J.R. Gray was 21. I went 75 with an 8. He went 78 with a 0, and we lost by 4 thou on a whole shot. I'm one of those drivers that keeps up with, not necessarily statistics or stats, but I kind of, you know, keep up with, I keep up with how many whole shot losses I have, and that made 4 total in my life. I lost to Ron Rhodes on a whole shot in the Leaf Spring Shootout back in like lights out 4. Matt Bell beat me on a whole shot in LDR at the Outlaw Streetcar Union in Memphis in 2018. Paul Gargis beat me on a whole shot, in the dart in LDR last year at South Georgia. And then I just lost to J.R. Gray in the quarterfinals of the Gator Nationals on a whole shot. You know, and of course everybody there is like, man, you just got to brush it off, you know, and I will, but dude, that shit stinks. Like when your entire team does exactly what they're supposed to do and they give you a tune up that is fast enough to win and you go out there and just step on your, you know what, by being late. And, you know, and like my dad said, he's like, dude, 47 is really not that late. And it's not a terrible light, but in NHRA Pro Modified, you've got to be 30 or better. You have to be.
Like, I can honestly say this week, I think a lot of people, if they could, looking back, they'll say, you know what? I should have gone to what I know and kind of been a little bit earlier on the tree. I mean, we can definitely talk about some of that, but we will break. Talk to a sponsor really quick, and we will come back. Mad Bro Motorsports, located North Hill, Minot, North Dakota, the leading performance and parts store. If there's anything you need for your hot rod, give Slam and Sam and the gang a call. 701-720-7996. Again, that is Mad Bro Motorsports. 701-720-7996.
On the way to being free.
So Lyle brought it up, and you know, we're kind of going to talk about all this stuff, but being laid on the tree, I can honestly say, and when I'm going to talk about it on the other podcast that I'm on, and that's Competition Plus Power Hour, and I know you have some, and I definitely want you to mention your stuff, but I mean, big weekend, right? After the gate, I mean, after Door Slammers, you have Erica going out in the semis, you have Greg going out in the semis, and then Erica going out again at the Gators. Then you have Stevie, like you said, you're beating him. He's not qualifying. Like, a lot of things kind of shook out this week, and I think the people that had the practice did a little bit better, but it's a lot of whole shot wins, I mean, across the board in the Gators. Yeah. I mean, from the bike class, pro stock, I mean, in every category.
And yeah, you know, in NHRA, especially when you're talking about pro modified, pro stock motorcycle, races are won and lost on the Christmas tree, period. You know, like, if you're not great, you can't just be good. You've got to be great every time you let go of the button or swap feet. I'm not saying that it's not as important in fuel funny car and top fuel, but most of the time it just, you don't see very many whole shot victories or, you know, or races decided by the tree. You just don't see it much. But in pro stock, pro mod, and pro stock motorcycle, it's everything. And then it trickles all the way down through the sportsman categories, right? You know, if you're 40 on the tree anywhere, in any of those classes I just mentioned, you deserve to lose. I'm just going to say it, you know, like, and Erica would agree. You know, she lost on a whole shot in Orlando. She lost on a whole shot in Gainesville, and she'll tell you straight up, if you're worse than 30, you deserve to lose. And, you know, and Justin told me in the pits, cause I was down, dude. Like, I mean, I was sick. I bought and caught an early flight home. I was so sick, you know, that I'd let my team down. You know, he's like, look, we both have to be good, or we both have to be great, for us to win these deals. He said, you know, and sometimes this is Justin speaking, and you're going to be good and it's going to be my fault. You know, he said, if either one of us screw up, we lose. That's just the way this works. And he's right. You know, and I knew that coming in, and I knew that when I took the bottom bulb there at the Gators, you know, I just brain fart, didn't let go in time, was probably shallower than I had been, all weekend long. I was 15. I was 0-15 on the light the round before that. Just tried to do exactly what I did the round before, and I was just late, you know. And there's, you know, I know it happens. It happens in big time auto racing, you know. And you can, and I've heard that. I mean, I've had people call, text, message, Telegram. I've heard it. You know, like, I know that it happens, but it's not acceptable in my book, you know. And I promised, you know, and vowed to the team that I would do better, you know. And that's what, you know, they worked really hard, dude. We, you know, we hurt some stuff, and they worked really hard all weekend. And for their hard work to pay off first round, and then me to just let it go there in the second, man, it's just heartbreaking, you know. But, you know, you do, in a sense, you got to be a better loser than you are a winner, you know, because we've got Atlanta in a month and a half. And when we show up to Atlanta, we can't be thinking about losing on the whole shot in Gainesville. You know, we've got to worry about winning the whole shot every round in Atlanta. You know, so you do have to move on, but you don't forget, you don't just brush these things off and forget them. You know, it's something that I just named all four whole shot losses that I have because I think about them all the time.
You know, I'm like, hoping that you don't have them written down somewhere, like after today.
No, I don't, but they're just ingrained in my mind. You know, like I hate losing on a whole shot and love winning one, you know, and that's any diehard drag racer. You know, you love to just see the disappointment and the life leave someone's body when you get out at the top end. They know they lost on a whole shot, you know, and it was very evident at the top end at the Gator Nationals on Sunday that I was extremely disappointed. You know, I came by Amanda Busick. She was like, see you at the next one. And I just wanted to be like, oh, yeah, I know.
But so speaking of this, like you have Alex, you have Erica, you have Troy. You know, when Bo Butner decides he wants to get back in the car, you have all these names that are right there with you, you know, with the elite name. How does that feel knowing you have that kind of support, that kind of, you know, team built around you? Richard Freeman, I mean, my
I say it doesn't seem real, you know, because at times you're like, dude, am I really a part of that? You know, but after spending 2 weeks with them on the road, you know, and being able to hang out, you know, and go to Richard rented a house down in Orlando and had everybody over, and we were all hanging out and eating dinner and playing games, and, you know, and just, it's just cool, dude. It's not something that many, you know, will ever get the chance to do. And I'm just super thankful that I've been given the opportunity, you know, and that the good Lord decided 5.5 years ago that I needed to stick around and keep doing this for a little while. You know, my dad's been a huge part of getting me where I am today, you know, and to see him excited and emotional when we qualified for the Gator Nationals, you know, on Saturday night in the last shot, you know, you just couldn't have written that one any better. You know, it's just cool, dude, you know, and they all, Richard Freeman, Erica, you know, Alex, even Aaron and Troy and the whole elite crew, you know, Richard's brothers, Robert and Royce, and they all welcomed us with open arms, you know, and come by the pit and check on us. And they all come to the starting line when we run, you know, and that means a lot. It means a lot to pull into the water and see Richard and Erica and Robert, you know, and now Alex is obviously driving a pro mod, so he's in the lane still, but all of them coming to the starting line to watch you go down the racetrack and support you and your team is cool, dude. And they're some of the best, you know, some of the best out there. And it's cool to have them as mentors, you know, and I know that Eric is like me, you know, you lose on a hole shot and you got to pout for a little bit, you know, just let me pout. Like I'll get over it, but I need to sulk a little bit. I need to lick my wounds. You know, but Alex, you know, when I got out of the car, I got there, he's like, look, dude, and he said, I know you're upset, but this may be the first time, but it will not be the last in an NHRA Pro Modified that you give one away at the tree. He said, it's just the way it is. This class is super competitive. I mean, you think there were two in the 60s after qualifying, Justin Bond went 63, Belushi went 64, Jose went 70 flat, I went 71, but from 70 flat, which was Jose, I was 71, to 79, there were 11, or the top 11 were 79 or quicker. Like, that is ridiculous. And the bump was an 82, you know, so you take those two outliers at 63 and 64 out, because they didn't run that fast in elimination. And you look at how tight that field is, you know, like anybody can win from any position. I mean, J.R. Gray was the number 12 qualifier and was in the semifinal because he cut my head off, you know, like, so it's the competition is just so tight, and it's, you have to be super focused, you know, ice in your veins and go up there every time, and try to be 00 or better. You know, it's just, man, it's crazy how competitive it is. You just, no round is given. You have to earn every single one, which is what makes it cool and why it's so desirable and such a fun class to watch. Because you don't, just because you qualified number one doesn't mean a hill of beans, man. Like, you can win from anywhere.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm sitting here back at home in North Dakota, and I'm trying to update everything, trying to keep people posted on this. But I'm working on a video that, you know, I got an interview with you down at the World Door Slammers, and I said it. No, it was during our live feed, actually. You were working on your shift light, and I'm like, you don't want to call out, like, Steve, you know, you don't want to call out Steve Fast Jackson or anything like that. And you said, nah, I just want to get my seat time and, you know, earn my dues, because, you know, from the radio racing, hey, calling somebody out, sending a little trash talk.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and that's one thing that, you know, he is really good at. I mean, he's on both sides mm-hmm. of the fence. And so does that, when you're lining up next to him, you know, for the first time in NHRA Pro Mod, is he just another driver, just like a, you know, a radio driver? Or, I mean, does that sit a little different at that point?
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you want to beat everyone the same, right? You just want to turn the wind light on. You know, now Stevie and I go way back. He tuned some of my early radio stuff. We helped him and sponsored him early on in his radio days. You know, so I've known him for years. He provided dinners and such for my family when I was in the Burn Center, because it was near his hometown there in Evans, Georgia. I was in Augusta. So, you know, we go way back. But him being the two-time champ, defending champ, you know, he's won all of the big radio races that you could ever possibly win. You know, you want to crush him as bad as you do anybody else, right? If not worse, you know, you, if you're going to go up, if you're going to race against the champ in front of a packed house in Gainesville at the Gator Nationals on a Saturday night under the lights, you don't want to lose. I don't care who it is, you know. And so, especially when you're racing the defending champ, you, as a rookie and a young gun and a new one to the sport, and a new name to some of these people in the stands, you absolutely want to do your best to absolutely crush the defending champ. Now, they all expect when we pulled up to the beam, like, oh, Stevie's about to crack off 65 right here, right? You know, and you want to be there to shut that down, you know. And I, you know, he's struggling, you know, he had a rough weekend. They didn't run too well, you know, and we put a pretty good butt whooping on him there in the final round of qualifying. Now, there's an entire season left. There's 11 races left, and I can guarantee you one thing, that by the end of the year, Stevie Fast Jackson won't still be DNQing, you know. If I'm going to beat him again down the road, I'm going to have to make a hell of a run and be really good leaving the starting line. So, you know, you got to take those – got to take the highs with the highs and the lows with the lows, you know, and that was definitely a high for us. You know, not only did we – that was our qualifier and our shot to the top at the Gator Nationals, but we, you know, we beat and outran the defending champ. So it's something to be proud of, you know, we've worked hard. We've made a lot of laps, you know, and that's a testament to how talented my team is, you know, and I hope that we can carry that into Atlanta and for the rest of 2021.
So what's that conversation like on the top end? You guys both roll out of the cars. You guys know each other. You guys have history. Do you throw a little jab there just because you guys are?
No. Okay. Nah, man. You know, Stevie's, you know, he's a legend and a very well-respected individual. And like I said, we are friends. And I knew by the time I made the turn off the track, I'd done the math and I realized he didn't qualify. You know, when I heard on the radio what he had went, you know, so you don't rub salt in those wounds because you don't ever know when you might need some help, you know, or some advice or something from him later. And you go down there and bust out of the car and start talking shit and you can write that off, you know, but I would never do that to him anyway. You know, we're at the end of the day on the starting line, we're enemies. When we make the turn off the racetrack, we're friends again, you know, and I felt for him, you know, and he did. He came right over, hugged me. Congratulations, man. That was an awesome run. You know, and then we hear this horrific explosion and screeching and grinding. And we turn around and here comes two cars, one upside down, one piled into the other, on fire. So the feeling of triumph and whatnot was kind of over, you know, because unfortunately Brandon Pez and Dustin got into each other there and had a pretty horrific crash. Both, you know, walked away and were okay. And that's all that really matters, you know, but nah, man, we'll talk some smack. JR kind of jumped in kind of talking a little junk and he's backed it up. You know, he's been to the semifinals at the first two races he's been to, you know, but I kind of like to get in here. Let's kind of figure out, get in where we'll start kind of stirring the pot some, you know. I think you're going to see some match races going on throughout the year, and you know, we'll start stirring the pot some, but I kind of take the get in, figure out kind of where you stand, try not to suck, and then if things go well and you're kind of in the groove, you know, then we'll start kind of stirring the pot a little bit.
And see,
you know, we leave.
I don't even think you're really going to have that problem. I met your team, you know, when we were down, you know, we all stayed at the same hotel, so we really got, you know, to know each other and talk and joke and laugh around, kind of like we were all on, you know, a team together. But, and that's what I like about, you know, those different races, but especially I think in this Pro Mod class right now, in NHRA Pro Mod, I think you have right now three guys, including, or I'm going to say four, because you, no, I'll say three for sure, guys that have the radio racing, have the grudge racing mentality too, yourself, Alex, and Stevie. And I think with the three personalities, like you said, you're going to see some stuff, but I think it's good for the sport of not just radio racing to have you guys there, but to have you guys on both sides and be able to go back and forth if you choose to, because you're going to bring that personality. You're going to bring that flair. And I think that's right now, as we say it on, you know, the other podcast that I'm on, NHRA is missing that personality. Absolutely. You know, John Force and everything that's going on there, everyone's looking at Stevie saying, okay, he's the next character. But now you've got three of you guys with, I think, very great personalities to help bridge that gap of NHRA racing and radio racing. Am I wrong there? Yeah.
No, you're not. But I think a name that needs to be added is J.R. Gray. You know, he is a legend in the grudge world. Was, you know, that his Jason X small block nitrous car was voted grudge car of the year this past year. And he is a smack talking radial racing, grudge racing, you know, I guess a country boy, like you would say, just like myself and Stevie, you know, and then obviously with Alex, you know, he's pretty pumped up and can talk some smack too. So you put us four, you know, I think if you put us in a bull ring with our feet tied together and boxing gloves on, it'd be a hell of a matchup, you know, and that's not something I necessarily want to do. It was a good analogy, so nobody get any freaking ideas. But yeah, I do think that the NHRA is missing some of that, you know, and I think initially when Stevie came in and kind of started that, it was a little bit kind of a shell shock deal. Nobody really knew what to do. And then when people started paying attention, that it brought new eyes to the sport. You know, he was bringing in an entirely different fan base, you know, in which we share some of the same fan base, from the same world, you know, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, increasing the talent there to pay attention to, you know, and kind of bringing in even more of those people, because I had several, you know, over the weekend. I bought NHRA TV just to watch, you know, you, Stevie, and JR, you know, or just you or whatever. So, yeah, you know, I do think it's something that's missing, you know, and the farther you go up the food chain, the more it lacks, you know, like in Top Fuel, there's just not a whole lot of that going on. My dude, Scott Palmer, is probably one of the most animated drivers there is out there, you know, and in Funny Car, you know, like you said, John Force is still the dude, right? But you've got the names like Alexis DeJoria, and you've got J.R. Todd driving in there. You know, you've got some names that are starting to make, you know, big waves. And I agree. I think that we need that. You know, it gets boring just turning on Fox and watching everybody straighten their ties, you know, and walk all perfect and talk, you know, and not cuss and not, you know,
no one wants to pay stuff that around. Fine. They don't want to pay
right.
that fine.
Yeah, you know, but I will. You know, like, dude, people like that shit. You know, they watch NASCAR for a couple reasons: to see the wrecks and to watch people fight. You know, now we're probably not going to fight, but I want to be. You know, if I'm mad or I'm upset and I think somebody did me wrong on the starting line, or I'm pumped up, I want to be able to see F yeah. You know, I don't know what I can say on here, but
you can say
yeah. You know,
you can say what you
fuck
want.
Yeah, you know, and hell yeah, you know, and jump up and down and then be pissed off and throw my gloves around and shit when I get beat. You know, like, it's not, we don't want to make it look cookie cutter and, you know, like we're all hired paid drivers and don't care about whether we win, lose, or draw. You know, like, I'll tell you one thing, I freaking hate to lose. Hate it, especially on a hole shot. You know, and I'm not going to go out on a limb and say I won't lose on another hole shot, but because it will probably happen. But I'm going to do my damnedest to make sure it doesn't, you know, and I think there are a lot or several out there throughout all the ranks. And when we're talking about the NHRA, it just is what it is. You know, they don't show much emotion, you know, and I think that's important to keep the fans interested and want to watch when we roll into Atlanta at the end of April.
So you're talking about all this. So a couple of years, I think it was last year when Steve Torrence pop the guy on the top end because you're plant with me. You're trying to make me lose. Me personally, that's great because every person like myself, every media person, we're all covering this. I think it was on.
Who was that? Was it Cameron?
Yeah, it was the younger. I forget who it was.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
But
he did exactly what anybody else would have done, right? You got a guy in the other lane that is on the verge of winning a championship but really needs to win that round. You damn right I'm going to try to throw a wrench in your plan, you know, and make you earn it. I'm not going to go up there and give it to you.
No, that's like guys here. I'm horrible at it. I will stage second. I will never double bulb anyone unless you're really pissing me off. But for me, I'll go in, but I'm not hitting that second bulb until you are in. Hey, look, there's my best friend walking by. Tell her I said hi.
Yeah. Sam said hey. Yeah.
But, so yeah, I'll never do that. But I can tell you, there was one guy who was a turbo car, If you're going to double bolt me, buddy, go ahead. Right. I was a nitrous car at the time. Go ahead. I'm going to let you sit there spooled up for a good hot minute. Because I know, hey, I've got a minute before I need to put, you know, so I'll stage. He got on his two-step, and I just let him sit there and cook. I'm not going to do my burnout first. If you're going to be a dick in the staging lanes and, hey, I'm trying to bet you or do side stuff, I'm going to play that game with you too. So I understand it. Right. I hope, like I said, I hope to see more out of it. You know, on the Competition Plus Power Hour, I got to be a little bit more geared towards the NHRA side. But we've said it, and we said it even with the president last weekend. Like, hey, we want to see more of these characters. And I think with the trends that are going, he's seeing that. He's understanding that. But the most important thing is always to thank your sponsors, especially when they build those great tools. I don't know if you share any tools with Alex, but what do you think about Power Built Tools?
We do share tools. I think Power Built's a great brand. I haven't used much of their stuff, but I think they're a great brand, and I think Alex and those guys do a great job of promoting them. You know, and I look forward to using some of them as Alex and I start to, you know, continue on through the season and start using some of what they've got. But I think they're great.
But PowerPilt does support us, so we will take a second and support them. All right, what's up, everybody? We've all been in the shop, and we have those tools that we just don't like to use. Well, I've got a solution for that. Go over to PowerBuilt.com. And use product code MADBRO15 at checkout. And save 15% while you're doing it. I mean, it's easy. I'm talking high quality and durable tools. Lifetime warranty. So if you break it, it breaks. Or just something happens, you send it back. No questions asked. Proven performance. I'm talking people in the NHRA and everywhere else are using these tools. So why don't you go over to PowerBuilt.com right now. Use product code 15 at checkout and save yourself 15%. Again, product code MADBRO15, save 15%. Yes, can't thank Power Build enough. But as we go down this journey here with Lyle, you know, we're talking about all the different racing, but do you plan on doing any more grudge racing, or are you going to stick to just NHRA this year?
Nah, man, we'll keep racing in the radio world and this no prep stuff. You know, I'm a firm believer in you don't never forget where you came from. You know, and my original fan base and those that supported me through my recovery, that's where they all are and where they came from. And I'll continue to do that as long as I can. You know, we still got some grudge racing, set up and going on with beer money, coming up soon, and got some no prep stuff coming up and going to get the dart back out and ready for some LDR action throughout the year. So, we'll absolutely still be, showing up to those when we can. You know, obviously our main focus will be here in the NHRA Pro Modified World. As we're going to run for a championship this year. But, you know, like I said, you can't forget where you came from. You got to keep supporting those that have supported you along the way.
I was hoping you were going to say you're going to park beer money, because I was going to hint, you know, even though
you told me you didn't like it at an LS.
If it's not mine, I can't complain. Mine's been sitting on jack stands. I got an 87 Fox Body LS. It's been sitting on jack stands now for 3 years. I'm building a small block, you know, if this gets out, I really don't care. Small block Ford, big turbo is the way I want to go. I mean, I got to learn the boosted world, so why not? But, I mean, I was just going to say, you know, if that's sitting and you need a driver, you know, probably figure out something there, you know.
What do you have to do to get here from North Dakota? You ride, like, horse and buggy for a little while and then maybe...
Well, it just depends, like... You know, there's no snow on the ground. It's been like 57 degrees even when I got back. It was like as warm here as it was at night in Florida.
Hammered with snow up there.
No, actually that big snowstorm that went through like Montana and Wyoming went south of us. So perfectly fine with that. Thank you, global warming. Usually, you know, you get on the polar bears and, you know, Eskimos and and then we drive
dogs and stuff.
Oh yeah. No, we really don't. Nice. You don't see any of that up here. And that's 100% honest with you.
Oh, I don't believe that.
I'm serious.
If your sleds had LSs on them, you wouldn't have to worry about flying. You just down to Florida.
So,
no problem.
Yeah, here, you know, you just stop in Minneapolis here, and then boom, straight down. 3 hours to Florida. What was it, like an hour to Minneapolis and then 3 hours to Florida? I slept both ways, especially after hanging out with JT for a whole week.
Oh,
you know how that, God. You mean, that what one that one night, you got to tell him, no. You guys walked in.
Yeah, I did. I walked in. I guess the eliminations were the next morning.
Yeah.
I think that was Saturday night. The bar area was packed, you know, and everybody's in there. And JT walks up. He's like, oh, my drinking buddy. I was like, no. No.
Well, everyone was
today.
Everyone was counting on it to rain.
Yeah, that's right.
It was Friday night. It was Friday night. And Wes is like, hey, we're putting on the fight. We're going to sit out here. It's going to rain tomorrow. So here we go. And... yeah, I mean, I even looked at JT at one time, and I was like, I'm done. I'm going to my room.
Yeah.
I'm done. Like,
oh, you sit down there long, and JT will keep you there till 3 or 4 in the morning, and you feel like a bag of ass the next day.
Well,
yeah, trust me. I know from experience.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's see. So, you've got a podcast, a great show that you guys aired on. You guys, I don't know if you're still doing Tuesday nights, or when are you?
Well, we are going to do it tomorrow night, but it's called Beards, Burnouts, and Beer. It's Facebook Live deal and we have recorded them, and we're going to, you know, release them onto a podcast platform in the future. But Chad Reynolds of Bangshift.com and I do it every Tuesday night at around 7 or 8, and it's, we have a good time. You know, we kind of like you, we talk pretty much anything drag racing, obviously. Tomorrow's show will be a recap of the Door Slammers and the Gator Nationals, and then some future plans that Chad and I have for the remainder of the year. We're going to do some stuff with some charities and whatnot, so we've got some stuff kind of stirring up for that. But, if you guys are interested, you know, and like stuff like this, you tune in tomorrow night around 7 or 8 on Facebook, and Chad Reynolds and I will have another dumpster fire, as we call it, of Beard, Burnout, and Beer.
I always have to listen to it back because I'm on that other podcast during that time. It seems like everybody decided Tuesday was the best day.
Yeah.
Like during quarantine.
Well, you know, and we talked about changing, you know, but for people like myself and you and anybody else who is heavily involved in the racing world, Tuesday is really the best day, you know, because, you know, like Mondays.
A travel day.
Normally, you know, if I was, you know, with the crew and unloading the cars and stuff, you know, we would still be at the shop. And by the time you get done, you're just so tired and worn out, you don't really feel like doing much. So I would just push it to Tuesday. Well, you know, and then Wednesdays, normally that's travel day. And, you know, and then you're so busy at the racetrack Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So Tuesday's really the best day, you know, but I think I can count like 3 or 4 that all happen around the same time on Tuesday night. So Chad and I had talked about moving ours. It just is what it is. It's cool that so many people are doing it and everybody's so interested, but it makes it tough to not step on each other, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I know Caruso's come on after that. I think Clay Milliken comes on for a bit. Then I'm on, you guys are on. So, and then, Boosted GT, he's, you know, kind of started one for a couple of weeks there. So everybody kind of picked Tuesday, which, you know, Tuesday kind of does work, you know, especially in the media standpoint. Yep. For mine, we get home Monday. You got to upload so much stuff, whatever. That's Monday. Tuesday, okay. Wednesday is usually a family day. Go out to grab something to eat, do whatever. Then Thursday, you're packing up, getting ready, because usually we either fly in Thursday night or fly in early Friday morning. So you don't want to be doing anything. But, you know, you touch basis on that there with your stuff. How does that work with, you know, with your family and everything like that, with the wife? How does, you know, she seems very supportive. I talked to her, my new best friend. How does that play in with the whole family thing with you traveling and everything like that?
You know, it's tough. You know, and anybody that's as heavily involved in the racing world as I am would tell you, you know, it's tough, and it's a balancing act. You know, you got to make sure that you're present, you know, and give some when you're at home. And then, you know, when you check out for for a week or so, be sure that you're checking in, you know, and make them feel like you haven't just forgot about them, right? But she is, you know, it's awesome to have someone that is so super supportive and, you know, and works all week and catches a really early flight on Friday morning, you know, to come down and hang out, and then a late flight on Sunday to get back so that she can get rested up and back to work on Monday morning. You know, she was right back to work at the hospital this morning. So, it makes it easy when you got someone who is super supportive. You know, we don't have any kids. So that is a little easier, but we do have two wild dogs that have to be taken care of. So, you know, it's a challenge, when you're on the road. You know, it's not normal for us to be gone for 2 weeks straight, you know, where we were at the Door Slammers for a week and then didn't come home because we were straight to Gainesville and there for a week. You know, most of the time it's just a Wednesday through Sunday deal. These past 2 weeks were not normal, you know, but it is tough, man. It's trying times at home when you talk about doing this for a living, you know, but you know, when you're somebody like me who loves it so much and has devoted so much of my life and my time to it, it's just hard to let it go, you know. And I've been very fortunate and, you know, and blessed and to be able to turn this into a career. It's not something that many people get to say, you know, and I'm very thankful and grateful that I get the opportunity to do this, you know, and hope that I can continue to do it for years to come and make my way up through the ranks, you know, and be a name that people talk about years down the road as, you know, one of the greats to drive a pro modified in the NHRA.
So when you talk about that, you know, and you're mentioning on the road and your wife is going back and forth, or fiance, not wife yet, right? Yep. So going right. back and forth and everything like that, how does that feel to know, like, was she a race fan before any of this?
Mm-mm.
Didn't care about it.
No.
So how does
no,
that
well, I mean,
feel?
Not that she didn't care, you know, it just that she had never been exposed to it, right? You know, and so we met in 2012.
You got to remember.
11, 12. 12 or 13. Dude, we've been together for 8 years. It all blends together. But, you know, and I told her before we started dating, I was like, listen, this is cool and we can do this, but do not give me it's the me or the race car ultimatum, you know, and, you know, she knew how much I loved it. My dad and I had been doing it for years together. And it was something I was very passionate about. And, you know, and granted if you're together long enough, it ends up not necessarily causing problems, but it's a topic of discussion when an argument comes up, you know? But she came to her very first race when I raced small tire stuff at Piedmont Dragway, back in the day. She actually drove an hour to the wrong direction before she realized it, at the very first race, which was, you know, a salty subject. But she's toughed it out, you know, was at work, hadn't made it to Georgia yet. The night that I was, had my accident, you know, left work, spent the 2 months with me down at the hospital, at the burn center in Augusta, Georgia, the JMS burn center, you know, was with me through that whole deal, was, you know, my caretaker through my year long recovery, managed for whatever reason to stay with me through my decision to go back racing, you know, and is now supporting me through my new journey in the NHRA pro modified ranks. So it's just cool, man. You know, and I'm very fortunate on this end too, that I've got somebody at home that supports what I do.
And especially having a nurse, like going through all that, I couldn't imagine first off, like I said, going through it, watching the interviews, watching everything that shaked out, you know, after that, but then saying, I'm getting back in the car and having a nurse, like her first instinct's got to be, what in the heck is wrong with you? Like, we've just went through all this. Like, knowing
first
that
instinct was like my mom was hell no, you know, because, and I was fortunate when I came home from the burn center, my stepmom was a nurse in the medical field. My stepdad was in the medical field as a PA. And then Melissa was, you know, was an RN and a nurse at the time. So I had medical care from all angles. And I really don't know how anybody goes through what I went through and comes home to a household that has zero medical experience, because there were lots of times that they made decisions to do this with medication or this with a particular wound. And, you know, that I wouldn't have known what to do if they wouldn't have known, you know. So I was really lucky in that aspect, you know. And then, you know, the initial reaction when I said I was going to go back racing was obviously like, are you out of your mind, you know. But, you know, when you're somebody like myself who just loves it so much, and, you know, and the competition is what fuels me, you know, and it's, I would have, you know, been in a different state of mind, I think, you know, and I don't want to say depressed, but I would have always wondered what it would have been like to get back in the car, you know, and I'm glad, obviously very glad now that I decided not to let that wreck define me, you know, and to get back on the horse that bucked me off, because we're, you know, we're in the professional ranks now, you know, and we're doing this for a living, and it's just cool, man. It's something that I never thought I would get to do, you know, and I'm literally living a dream right now, and I'm super grateful.
So looking back, like, do you think this situation defines who Lyle Barnett becomes in the future, who he was in the past? Do you think that was a turning point, or do you think stepping back into the car after that and proving yourself again was the turning point?
The crash, I would have to say it's a combination of the two. You know, inevitably the crash put my name on the map, right? You know, like, everybody knew who I was. If you didn't know me before, you knew who I was then, because I'd been in one of the worst door car fires the sport's ever seen, right? You know, and then obviously it was my choice to get back in the car, but it was the support from the racing community as a whole that drove me and gave me the drive to want to do it again. You know, like, they were super supportive. My family was super supportive. You know, and then when I did get back in the car, it was a huge deal. Like, so many people were so pumped up and, you know, and were super, you know, proud and were congratulating me, you know. And then we go out there and we win the first race back, at South Georgia after my, set the Lee Spring world record, you know, and went on to be on the Horsepower Wars show. And then I took Beer Mounting on Netflix to the Fastest Car Show. You know, and then all this transpires, and, you know, and I become a name that, you know, that is talked about in the racing world. And then, you know, and I get an opportunity to drive a pro mod for Richard Freeman and Justin Elks, you know, Richard of Elite Motorsports and Justin Elks of Modern Racing, you know, and now here we are in the NHRA, you know. So the crash itself and everything around it was definitely a turning point in my career. Would I be here without that? I doubt it, man. Honestly, you know, I just, because it, you know, it did things for me outside of racing, you know, and on the social media platforms, which is really drives your sponsorship exposure, you know. And so it was definitely a turning point, you know, in my career. And I think that we took a really bad situation and turned it into something super positive, you know. And not only am I thankful that it's given me the opportunity to do what I'm doing, but, you know, I use my story and my recovery to inspire others, you know, because there are things that you know, may have gone through or that people go through in life, you know, mountains that seem, you know, insurmountable, right? You know, like, you, something that you're never going to be able to get over. And, you know, and I think that in some instances and in some cases that people see my recovery and my drive and my willingness to get back out there and embrace my physical change, you know, and whatnot, and just keep pushing, you know, and not let it define you, you know, just keep on going, keep on keeping on is what I say, you know. It is what it is. There's nothing I can do to change, you know, the way that my face looks or the way that my hands look, or, you know, the fact that I don't have any eyebrows, or, you know, like, there's nothing I can do to change that, you know. So why sit at home and sulk and be depressed about it, you know, and not do and what I want to do and live my life that the way I want to live it. You know, there's no reason that you can't just pick up, you know, what you've got left and just keep on trucking. You know, I don't walk out in public and get picked on for the way I look, you know, like, and even if I did, you know, and early on, you know, kids would look and people would point, you know, and stuff when I was wearing this big face mask and all this other stuff. And even at that time, it just didn't matter. You know, like, I was lucky to be alive, and I knew that, you know, and the good Lord left me here for a reason. And I just kept on keeping on. You know, I got an awesome service dog that helped me get through part of that struggle. And, and have, you know, I lean on the racing community, or I leaned on the racing community early on to keep my spirits up, you know, and my family was super supportive, like I said, and we've continued to hopefully inspire others, and we've turned this into something pretty cool, you know, and it's just awesome to look back, you know, today, to look back 5.5 years ago and go from, you know, is he going to make it or is he not going to make it, you know, a near-death experience to qualifying fourth for the Gator Nationals in my very first Pro Mod race, and I'll leave there fifth in the points, you know. So, I mean, I think about that as I say it, and you're like, dude, is that really real? You know, yeah. And it is. Like, we've managed to make it, you know, and it's just cool, dude. It's really awesome.
You go through that situation, and you look back, and then you jump, like you said, you jump back into a car, and then after you jump back into a car, now you're jumping into a bigger car, a bigger situation, you know, and now you're on the biggest platform in drag racing, honestly, that we have, and you're still, you know, writing sentences and putting a period at the end, and it doesn't stop at what was and what could have been. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, I think that gravitates a lot of people to you is just, you know, your story alone. But we definitely are going to dive into more of your story, more of what you've got going on here in a minute. But like always, we have to thank our sponsors. All right. So diving more into this story, like I said, you know, diving into more of who Mr. Barnett is. Looking at it, right, we have these big money races. And this is kind of a controversy thing. I brought it up last week. But seeing these big money races, not alone just Lights Out, No Mercy, and everything else that's going on. Now you've got, you know, couple, you know, NHRA style big name races. Do you think the trend in this situation is going to go up? We're going to see more big money races for you guys, Pro Mod, Pro Stock, maybe some different classes come in, or do you think that's going to stay more towards the radio racing? Or I'm going to ask that, and I'm going to say, what would you like to see more of? Putting you on the spot here.
It's that's a catch-22, in my opinion. Here's the problem. We spend ridiculous amounts of money. Ridiculous. There are race cars out there that cost more than most people's homes, right? I mean, that's legit. Like,
yeah.
I know exactly what we paid for this house right here that I'm sitting in, and it is less than half of what some race cars cost today to build. And think about that. I want you to think about that for a second, right? So
that's why Door Slammer Racing is more, I guess, easier for people to wrap their head around, because it's some of these Door Slammer cars, right? Some of these Fox bodies and different things like that versus NHRA.
Right. Yeah. You know, and so with that being said, with how much they cost, you can't do this for the money, right? I mean, anybody that does this for the money or thinks they can do it for the money is wrong. You know, like, it costs way more to do it than you can win unless you win every single race. And you ain't going to do that. You're going to lose more than you win, period. You know, so it's nice to see some of these promoters and some of these organizations and sanctioning bodies step up and pay big money. The downside to that is that as more of those start doing this, the little man starts losing his car count and his draw, right? Because if I can race for, using round numbers, if I can race for $10,000 this weekend, I'm not going to go next weekend and race for $1,500. Now, good competition, great people, you know, maybe even a better racetrack for $1,500. But if I can go race for $10,000, I'm going to take my chances racing for $10,000 over going and racing for $1,500. You know, whereas before, everybody paid around the same and you got good car counts all over the place because people just wanted to race. Well, now that there's been such an investment into building the car and your program, nobody wants to go race for small money anymore. And in fact, you're starting to see some promoters and some sanctioning bodies taking some heat for not paying enough. You know, now you can look at that from the other end of the rope and say, well, why won't you pay more money? If you were going to spend all this money to build these cars to put on this level and this caliber of a show, why aren't you paying more money? You know, well, because they can't, you know, because they don't have $400,000 to $500,000 to build a race car and buy a rig and all the tools and the parts and stuff that it takes to go run Radio Versus the World or Limited Drag Radio or X275, right? You know, like, so they literally can't afford to pay for it. So then you start looking outside the box. Well, let's get sponsors to pay the purses. Great idea. They get their name on the headline of your event. They get all this publicity around the pits, you know, and that's a good way to do it. Well, then the problem is the people that were paying the hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever in purses, the sponsors want to go to them first because they're the ones drawing the big crowd, and it never trickles its way down to the little man, you know? So at this point in the game, if you're going to put on a race and you're going to try to stick your neck out there and have races for, you know, whether it's pro modified or whether it's radio racing or whether it's no prep, you got to pay big money or you're not going to get the car count. And if you don't have the car count and the names to put on the flyer to draw in the crowd, then there's no point having the race, you know? So I think at this point, your only choice is to pay big money. You know, and that is all dependent on which class you're talking about, you know, because like for small tire, no prep, we'll start at the bottom for, in the caliber of cars I drive for beer money, you know, like if it pays 10 grand, I'll probably go.
I'm going to be the future driver. Let's just let everyone know that right now. I'll be the future driver of beer money.
Fair enough. Fair
yes.
enough.
Yes. But Mom, I made it.
In the world of small tire, no prep racing, I'll travel pretty much anywhere within 5 hours, let's say, for 10 grand, right? 5 to 6 hours. And then, you start cutting it down. All right, they're going to pay $5,000 to win. I'll travel a couple hours, you know, 2 to 3. And then my little local track here, Mooresville Dragway, I don't care if they're paying 100 or 20,000. I'm going, you know. I mean, I went mid last year and won 10,000 at JJ's Arm Drop small tire no prep race, you know, and it was at my home track, and I've got tune up for days in this laptop I'm talking to you on, you know, and that Pete Harrell of HED, he put those in here. I will not take any credit from Pete because he is the tuner and the mastermind behind it. But, you know, so if you're, and there's not enough of whether there's a lot around here, but if you're talking about trying to draw cars in from the East Coast, you know, or all over the country, let's say, there's a huge no prep race from the top end here called Digger Die. It pays like 100 grand to win or something crazy. You know, you got to pay that kind of money to get, you know, 120 car field, which is what they had. They had more than that, maybe 120 small tire no prep cars. Came to Rockingham Dragway back in December, I think, for 50 grand to win or something like that. But that's what I'm getting at is you've got to pay big money if you want big car counts and big crowds. The size of your purse is directly related to the size of the crowd and the number of cars and everything else around your event. And that's just the way it is now, you know, and I don't know who's to blame. I'm not saying he's at fault, but Donald Long was really the initiator of all this, right? You know, he started paying these huge purses to win in radio racing, and now you've seen, you know, the talents like Tyler Crossnow and Monty from up at Yellow Bullet and stuff. You know, they've been essentially been forced to pay bigger purses, you know, to even get a remotely the number of cars that go to South Georgia, you know. So, but that's just the way it is now, you know, like there's no changing that, you know. If you start cutting purses, people are just going to start selling race cars, you know, and then at some point there's just not going to be any racing to be done, you know, and then back when I first started radio racing, you needed a pretty decent racetrack, but it was a tuner's game. You know, you had to go out there and tune your stuff and get as much out of that racetrack as you could possibly get. And over the years, we've transitioned into this. We want the racetrack to come to us. We don't want to go to the racetrack. And what I mean by that is we want the track prep extraordinaires. You got Jimmy Bradshaw, Wade from down in Bradenton. You've got Tyler Crossnow, Jason Rukert. Who else do we have? Miller from up at MIR. God, I'm gonna leave somebody out.
I mean, even after being down in Orlando, we know Wade left and everything like that. I think Sydney, I mean, he's stepping up. He had big shoes to fill, right? And I think he honestly, as a younger, I think he's younger than me. I think he's in his early 20s. I think he's doing a phenomenal job. But then again, he had a great mentor, you know, which is...
You know, but the problem is that we no longer go to a race to race the racetrack. We go to a race in radio racing now, is what I'm talking about here, not NHRA Pro Modified. Radio racers go to a radio race to have a home run derby. It's no longer about racing the racetrack and figuring out how to get down the racetrack. You go up there and four or five or six pair in a row smoke the tires. And it's not that the racers aren't trying to get down the racetrack that's provided. It's that the track prep sucks. Well, why aren't we racing the racetrack that we are provided as opposed to demanding this ridiculous track prep? And it's a problem because now people are spending ridiculous amounts of money to build the most high horsepowered hot rods they can build because they have been provided this ridiculous track prep and they are able to use all 5,000 horsepower, whatever the hell they're making, to burn the scoreboards down, which is cool, you know? But now the radio fan base expects to see 350s in Radio versus the World. They expect to see 370s in Pro 275. They expect to see 390s in Limited Drag Radial. And they expect to see 14s in X275. And if they don't see that, it's not that the racers and the tuners can't figure out how to get down the racetrack. It's that the track prep sucks. How ridiculous is that?
Well, I've said it. I've said it for a while now. Anytime you hear Lights Out, No Mercy, or any other race that Donald puts on, you expect a new world record. You expect it. You expect a record, period. And I'm glad you're saying it because you're in that field. And it sucks. I mean, I've had this conversation with a few announcers and different people, and they've said, well, I mean, we've kind of got lucky with it. And like you said, you know, we've got used to it. And they blame it on a couple of people ruining it because of how much money they have and this and that. But it's like, at some point, that racetrack or that promoter is going to say, hey, you know what? No, we're done prepping the track. We've done what we can do. And I think it would be a shakeup. You say, okay, here, look, you guys are all supposed to be these great racers and this and that. So you guys are still going to race for all this money, but let's shake it up. Here's the racetrack. Here's what you're getting. We're going to, you know, do exactly like we did in Orlando. Okay. Before this class or that class, we're going to prep the track and that's what you get.
It's the only way to save radio racing at this point, in my opinion. Now, the downside is that if they start doing that and your Lights Out and No Mercy fan who saves their vacation time to go down to South Georgia goes to South Georgia and they watch 60% of the cars smoke the tires, they're not coming back. So it's a balancing act, you know, but just like an NHRA Pro Modified, like they go out there and run up and down the track a couple times with the rotator, but they're not out there prepping for Pro Mod. You know, like, we get what we get. If it's 110,000 degrees outside and the track is 150, they're not stopping to let the track cool down. Get your asses out there. That's the racetrack you got. Figure out how to get down it. I've been to radio races, many radio races, that it just got too hot and they stopped racing. We're gonna take a 5-hour intermission and start back when the sun goes down. Well, what about all these people that paid admission to get in to watch races and have somewhere to be at 7 or 8 that night? You know, when the schedule said that the track was going hot at 11 a.m. and that Q1 would be over or Q2 would be over by then. You know, and instead we haven't even started qualifying because it's too hot. You know, like I don't even know if minimizing track prep will fix it at this point. I think we've done this to ourselves and we are where we are, and you're just going to have to create a new pro drag tractor class because you spend in an 8-hour event, you watch a tractor go up and down the racetrack for 3 hours, you know, and I've got friends that make their living off of prepping racetracks, and I'm not downplaying what they're doing, but we've got to make a change or radio racing is on the way out. You know, like, you can't continue to make fans and people who pay for this ridiculous pay-per-view to watch tractors go up and down the racetrack or watch commercials for hours on end because they're waiting for the track to cool down. Like, it's not going to work. You know, like, that doesn't work. And that's why no prep racing and pro modified racing has taken back over as far as the mainstream is concerned, because people are tired of watching the track being prepped. You know, they watch the track be prepped for hours on end to have a, you know, for your Jason Lees and your Stevie Jacksons and people like that to go out there and potentially break a record, you know, and then you wait all this time and they go out there and put a little too much in it and it smokes the freaking tire anyway, you know. Like,
I'm glad you're saying it because, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't want to see it die. Like, it's where I come from, you know, and it's my roots are there, and I don't want to see it go away. But all of us, you know, and we could have a round table discussion if you want to.
I'll come to North Carolina.
And we could pick, I mean, you could pick a few and I'll pick a few, you know, and we'll go right up to Virginia Motorsports Park and sit in Tyler Crossnow's office, who is one of the best track prep dudes I know, you know, and he'll tell you that I'm right. You know, like, we've had this discussion on the phone, you know, and I don't want to see it go away, but honestly, it's what has attracted me to the no prep racing, because there is no prep. We ran an entire event at Mooresville Dragway, small tire, big tire, it's like a street legal class or whatever, and the whole event was over in a day, you know, and we have to start qualifying in South Georgia on freaking Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, like, what?
So does that play in your favor? Because you like the no prep, you've done the radio, now into NHRA, does that all play in your favor? Like, okay, you may blip the tires, but you know how to control it a little bit? Or is that something that it's just, it is what it is?
It's two totally different things, man. You know, in the radio racing, if you quiver or zip the tire, it's over. You know, like, it's very rarely can you recover it and make even a respectable pass. You know, these pro mods, if you're on a, let's just say you're on a 68 and it starts shaking and you give it a little blip and get back in it, you can still run 74. Yeah. You know, like, you don't lose a whole lot, you know. And the same thing in the no prep deal. You know, like, it's common for me to have to go out there and pedal beer money, you know, to get it back under control and still make a good pass and win the race, you know. So, I don't know, man. I don't back to what we were talking about earlier, I don't even know how to fix it. You know, part of me feels like it, that the nail has, you know, the nails are now being driven in the coffin, you know, and you're going to see radio racing disappear. I hope not, you know, and I've been wrong before and I'll be wrong in the future. But as much as I don't want to see radio racing go away, you know, I think that your fan base is going to start looking elsewhere if we don't start figuring out how to make it a better show. Because at the end of the day, we're in the entertainment business, right? Like, yeah, we're all racers, you know, like, I now race at the professional level, you know, and that's awesome. But we're entertainers. We need fans in the seat. We have to have them or we don't have a place to race. And if we continue to take all day to prep the racetrack, fans are going to quit coming to watch the races because they're tired of seeing the track being prepped. They're tired of it. They want to see race cars go up and down the racetrack. They don't want to watch the track being prepped or us waiting 3 and 4 hours for the sun to go down. That's all I've got.
You joined the elite team, and I think you took a lesson from Wes there with the whole, you know, the whole thing right there. I like it quite a bit. I like it quite a bit. But, you know, wrapping this whole thing up, you know, great to have you on and everything like that. But when you look back and you tell, like I said, you tell your story and you look at all the other things that are going to happen with, you know, you heard it here first. I am now going to be the new driver of Beer Money. I'm absolutely excited about that. Got to figure out when I can get down to North Carolina, start making test hits. So we're, you know, super excited about that one. But no, all joking aside, though, when you look back and you want to tell your story to anyone and, you know, just explain who you are and what it all is about, how do you do that?
Man, you know, I think that my story, the best message it delivers is perseverance and the willingness to get back up on the horse that bucked y'all. You know, it's we had a pretty rough go there when I had my crash, and like I said, the support of the racing community is something that it really almost can't be explained. You almost have to experience it, which I wouldn't wish on any damn body. But you know, I didn't come from nothing. You know, I was very fortunate growing up. You know, was given about anything I wanted, had really nice vehicles and, you know, and four wheelers and dirt bikes and nice race cars, you know, and I really had a great platform to kind of stand on to send my career off, you know, but, you know, if there's anything that I would advise to anybody out there is just to never give up. You know, it's tough out there, you know, especially with all that's going on in the world right now, but, you know, always be the best that you can be because you never know who's watching. You know, and your opportunity may come when you least expect it, like mine did, you know, you know, I'll take a second and thank a few people, you know, first and foremost, the good Lord for leaving me around here, you know, 5.5 years ago, you know, he's got a purpose for the life that I'm living, you know, and I think we're fulfilling part of that right now. But, you know, obviously my dad, you know, my parents, you know, my fiance and family for supporting me through all of this and allowing me to live my dreams, you know, Richard Freeman, for choosing me to drive this badass pro mod that I get to drive week in and week out, Justin Elks, for setting that thing up and putting it down the racetrack. Just got to be on time, letting go of the button, and we're going to work on that. But my whole team, you know, Ben Stoss does my front half, Josh Hootie does the back. You know, my dad's there that helps out, Tommy Kurt with MacFab Beadlocks was my primary sponsor here for the first two races of the year and is going to ride for the rest of the year as well. Elite Motorsports, Elite HP, Elite Performance, like I said, Modern Racing, Pro Charger, Billet Atomizer, Fuel Injectors, High Performance Lubricants. You know, all you guys are a big part of what we do. And I just couldn't be more thankful for this opportunity. And if I forgot anybody, sorry. I need to probably should look at my notes here to make sure I didn't forget anybody. VP Racing Fuels, God, see, good thing to pull up, keep notes. VP Racing Fuels came on board this year, you know, for fuel. So just a thanks to all those that I've mentioned, and a thank you to anybody that I should have mentioned and left out. It was not on purpose, but man, we're looking forward to continuing on. You know, I've left Gainesville in the top five in the points in NHRA Pro Modified, and with plans to move forward and try to climb this ladder to the top. You know, there's not a weak sister in the bunch here. So you gotta be on your game, when you're racing at this level, you know, and thankful to all you guys that allow us to come on here and tell our stories and beg for sponsorship and try to keep this train moving, you know. And with that being said, we do have sponsorship partners opportunities. If you are interested in coming on board for the rest of the year, we plan to run all 12 races if they in fact get to do so. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody who would like to join our program and partner with us. It's a good time. You know, we've got a really good team and I think we're going to be pretty competitive and we will be, we'll be one to be worried about for the rest of the year, I think.
No, and that's awesome. I know, you know, I'm sporting the, Modern Racing hat right now. You know, maybe I planned that out before doing this interview, but right. No, you know, and that's something that you and I talked about too. So if anyone doesn't know how to get a hold of Lyle, you can definitely reach out to me. More than willing to help him with anything that he's got going on. Like I said, everybody kind of gravitates to those people that you can connect with, that you relate to, and you know that it's all a good time. And especially with Lyle there, like I said, you know, meeting him in person for the first time in Orlando at his pitch, you know, just being comfortable, being able to walk in, and then seeing him and his crew down at the hotel every night, like we said, hanging out with JT, laughing, joking around. And then I think it was Matt, right, that yep. he looked like he was gonna just hurl over that day sitting on the golf cart. So it's like, hey man, here's a Red Bull, wake up. And you know, it's right. Little things like that and the stories that we all get to laugh about and tell about later. But like I said, if you guys need to get a hold of Lyle or anything like that, I can do that. I can help you out in any way. And like I said, I'm willing to help you out. I know you got your show, so definitely want you to promote your stuff. And thanks for coming on. So Let us know where we can hear you and your podcast at one more time.
Yeah, it's Beards, Burnouts, and Beer. We're live on Facebook on Tuesday nights most of the time. If you can look me up on Facebook, you know, just my name, obviously Lyle Barnett, the same thing on Instagram. And I usually give a heads up on both platforms when we're going to do a show. So, but we will do one tomorrow night, sometime around 7 or 8. We'll be live on Facebook. You can catch either myself there or go to Chad Reynolds' page, and we'll share it around and whatnot. But Sam, I appreciate you bringing me on, dude. And it's been a pleasure and a good time. And anytime you need a fill in, I'm always available.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we will have you on, mark my words, we will have you on the Competition Plus Power Hour. Like I said, we want to spread the word of the younger drivers and keep it going. Like I said, it's not business related when I'm talking to you. It's good fun. And hopefully, maybe, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But maybe I might, you know, be able to will the beer money at some point. We'll see. We'll see. I'm going to keep pressing for that one. Tell the missus right. I said hello, and thanks again for coming on.
Yes, sir, dude. I appreciate it. See you guys later.
Yep. And that, everybody, was Mr. Lyle Barnett, now driving an NHRA Pro Mod. And, I mean, he's up to great things. Like I said, he's also the driver of Beer Money, a radio racer. So we just like supporting our own and seeing them advance. But we will take a break as our stomach is starting to rumble, but we have to thank the great folks over at El Azteca Mexican Food. El Azteca Mexican Food, located here in Minot, North Dakota, on the north side. If you want the best and authentic Mexican food located in Minot, North Dakota, please check out the gang up at El Azteca Mexican Food, located right near the Minot International Airport. Go up there, try one of the burritos, and I guarantee you, you will not leave hungry. The best and authentic Mexican food here in Minot, North Dakota, again, that is El Azteca, for all your dine-in and dine-out needs. All right, and so just wrapping it up, kind of going through a closure. Guys and girls, we will be back on our weekly podcast forums. Like I said, we had some stuff going on, and we were down in Orlando there for a week helping out Drag Illustrated, Wes Buck, and the crew that put on the C-Tech Manufacturer World Door Slammer Nationals. And hopefully we can get some of the winners there. The Corral boys, the Corrado brothers, sorry, they had a phenomenal showing, both of them in the finals, beating Erica and Greg Anderson, who they both put on the trailer, and it was a Corrado boys final. Speaking of Greg Anderson, shout out to him. Yesterday was his birthday, and he got the win in NHRA Pro Stock. There was a rookie driver who got his first win, so a lot of big things coming. Like I said, 21 race season is going to be great. Again, we have to thank all of our sponsors. That's El Azteca Mexican Food. That is Mad Bro Motorsports. And that it also is Power Built Tools. If you guys want to use a product code, again, that's Mad Bro 15. Save 15% out checkout. And that is on top of their low prices, so you guys can't beat that. Again, listen to this on the podcast form. Listen to it and watch the videos on YouTube. Check out all of our social medias. But if you want to become a part of the podcast for the 2021 race season, please let us know as we are starting to get that underway. I know we have a burger company that's going to be coming on, Finish Line Burger, thanks to Clint and the crew for our dirt series that we're going to be doing. So there's a lot of great stuff coming up, and there's a lot of racing. But it's always been fun as we've been in and out of that groove. We've hit the loud pedal a couple of times. We've whacked the throttle. We're going to be floating those valves. But until next week, y'all keep smashing that loud pedal. This has been another episode of In the Groove Podcast, brought to you by Mad Bro Motorsports, Power Bit Tools, El Azteca Mexican Food, and the good folks over at Outlaw Performance ENT. If you have not done already, please like us on all of our social medias. That is Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button so you can get all the updates to everything we've got going on, and you can stay in the groove and smash that loud pedal.